Case number 08-1199, Connecticut Department of Public Utility Control, et al., petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Speck for the petitioners, Ms. Perry for the respondent.
Yes, the court's going to take a brief recess to get a computer problem resolved.
Thank you.
morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Randall Speck, and I represent the Connecticut Department of Public Utility Control. The court should grant the petition and overturn FERC's orders for four key reasons. The first is that under FERC precedent, incentives are against the public interest when they merely reward transmission owners for doing what they're supposed to do.
I don't understand how you make that argument, because the proposition that an overseer has a stick does not mean that carrots will not be useful. You seem to assume the contrary, that there cannot possibly be need for a carrot.
Well, in this instance, Your Honor, they have already received the carrot, essentially. They received a 50 basis point adder for assuming an obligation. And it makes no sense, it seems to us, to have to pay them another 100 basis points in order to perform the very obligation that they've already assumed.
The object of the commission was to produce speed beyond what they guessed would result if they didn't provide the adder, right?
I mean,
that's plain from the cost-benefit analysis, which is, to be sure, incomplete, but nonetheless, the whole concept is one of speed. And why is it senseless to reward someone for doing what they ought to do by a device which tends to accelerate their doing it?
Well, there are a couple of reasons, Your Honor. First, FERC didn't, in this instance, emphasize speed. In fact,
quite a few references.
Well, they had a lot of references to it in their orders and in their brief. But, Your Honor, the primary way that they could have done this was to set a deadline.
I understand
and
that.
And they did not do that.
I understand that. But the fact that there was another way doesn't mean that the way they employed is invalid.
But the only mechanism that they cited for achieving this additional speed would be that the transmission owners would try harder. They would work harder if they got more money. There's no evidence, Your Honor, that anything that they could do would have made any difference whatsoever in terms of speeding up the process.
You don't think that making more effort, giving something a higher priority is going to have any effect?
There was no evidence, Your Honor, that they would give it a high priority.
Not only was there expert evidence, but also ordinary understanding of human nature suggests that when there is an extra reward, people will work harder to get it.
But in this instance...
In your reply brief, you reached the issue of QIP in footnote 2.
Yes, Your Honor.
But let's assume 100% QIP goes into the rate base on a suitable filing. You still only get it after you've made the investments, right? So in order to get the benefit of QIP in the rate base, they have to make the investment.
But in this instance, Your Honor, everyone, all of the witnesses, Mr. Scott, who testified on behalf of the company, their expert witness, Mr. Schnitzer, all of them agreed that these projects would all be completed. That was never a question.
But the question is when?
That was the question, Your Honor, but there was no effort whatsoever by FERC to pin them down to say, okay, what are you going to do?
I understand you have an alternative theory, a different incentive that you would propose. But the question is whether the incentive that FERC chose was within its authority.
Well, as a matter of human nature, Your Honor, I think what would happen in a circumstance like this, where there is no measurement of performance, there's no penalty for non-performance, the human nature would indicate we will do exactly what we can get by with, as little as we can get by with, and still get the reward.
I don't understand that at all. Suppose they have a range of potential investments, some with the adder, some without the adder. It would seem to me that management would be almost bound to give a special priority to the investments with the adder.
They were already bound, Your Honor.
I understand you keep coming back to that, but I have to say that seems to me almost completely irrelevant.
Well, we don't believe it is irrelevant, Your Honor, because in every instance, All of the projects that we're talking about in this case, they were already compelled to build those. They said that they absolutely would. In fact, Mr. Scott testified that they were already making every effort to complete those projects. What more could they do if they got more money? In this instance, what we're looking for is, what are we going to get in response to our paying this additional adder? Are we going to get anything additional? And there's nothing in the record to indicate that any incremental benefit accrues to customers from paying this adder.
Well, that's on the assumption that it has no tendency to accelerate their investment process.
Well, Your Honor, the administrative law judge who looked at all of this evidence and heard the witnesses herself.
He was clearly applying a different standard. The issue that was dispositive for him was whether the projects would get built.
Well, and she concluded that there was no evidence that anything different was going to happen as a result of paying the adder. In other words, based on the original standard that the commission set, whether the incentive is needed to obtain the new transmission, she concluded quite conclusively that all of these buzzwords, she said, didn't really contribute anything to building the project faster or to having it completed at all.
Your Honor, ask about the quip point. Did you make that argument below?
Yes, we did, Your Honor. We made it to FERC, and we made it at the in the hearing itself.
And you didn't make it to us before the reply brief, though, is that right? It's only at a footnote in the reply brief.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. But that really is, I think, a sort of tangential point.
Okay.
In some respects. It just goes to the incentives, really. And the incentives here, I think, were all for the transmission owners to take as long as they possibly could and still not be found imprudent. So the only real standard that they were held to here is the prudent standard, which, as we all know, is a very loose standard. The evidence that was adduced at the hearing indicated that there is nothing to materially affect the owner's behavior to produce any incremental customer benefit. Indeed, the evidence showed that there was no discernible customer benefit from paying the owners this additional 100 basis points. There was an absence.
You go back to evidence. I mean, it seems to me it's fundamentally a judgment as to people do like more money rather than less money on the whole. At least that's my experience.
And customers generally prefer not to spend extra money.
Indeed. On the other hand, it's clear that there were bottlenecks and various bad consequences from delay that the customers had an interest in being resolved. And the commission concluded that the extra money for speed, and it is extra money for speed because you only start getting it once you make the investment, would have a material accelerating effect. Seems to me that the type of judgment they constantly make and on which we constantly defer to them.
Well, Your Honor, that was a judgment that FERC could have made at the time when it originally set this case for hearing. That's exactly what it did with regard to the 50 basis point adder. They said, as a matter of policy, we don't need any further evidence. We will grant that 50 basis point adder.
They also make that judgment in the order on rehearing.
Your Honor, They certainly didn't cancel the hearing, the evidentiary hearing. They had exactly the same evidence
In the order on rehearing, they give their ultimate reasoning for sustaining this adder.
But they did not, Your Honor, go back and change the instructions to the hearing examiner.
No, I mean, they addressed the question, would there be any point in sending it back to the hearing examiner, and they conclude not, because of their analysis in the order on rehearing. I mean, I think you have to point us to flaws in the order on rehearing.
Well,
in other words, that an agency isn't bound to steps that it took en route to its final decision unless those steps result in a decision which itself is unsustainable.
Well, except that, Your Honor, I believe that FERC also has to at least explain why it is deviating from prior precedent. And in this case, the prior precedent was the Neepool case, in which it was very, very clear that they said that incentives are not to be paid, and it's against the public interest, in fact.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you've actually raised this, the argument that there was a swerve, an unexplained swerve.
Well, we do.
I think you point to your quotation of Commissioner Kelly saying, I can't conceive of a case in which an applicant would ever be denied an incentive under the majority's new standard. That, I mean, conceivably, that raises the issue of the newness of the standard, but it would seem to me a more standard reading, which appears to be the reading that the Commission gave, was that that was an attack on the laxness of the standard.
Well, there are two separate issues here, right. But addressing the one that you've just raised at page JA 405 through 407, I believe, are the passages that we cite. And beginning at page 405, we said in our rehearing request that the majority standard for approving incentives is so indiscriminate that it would ratify virtually every proposal for an inflated ROE. And the next page, we indicate in the sentence that begins third that the page 406, the majority's approval of the transmission owner's proposed 100 basis point adder is inconsistent with the principles articulated in the commission's articulated standards the commission promised it would follow. In other words, the ones that were originally proposed. That clearly is a distinction between the new standard that has been adopted in the order 489 and in the rehearing order, and the previous standard that had been adopted when the commission set this case for hearing. In other words, whether the adder was needed to incent new investment.
And can I just ask about Neepool? It seems to me that the most important part about Neepool is that, quote, the proposal was filed on August 27, only a few days before the September 1 start of the live line maintenance procedures that the proposal was intended to encourage. And the procedures were finished by the time that it was done. So the proposal cannot provide an incentive to encourage proceedings that have already been completed. Now, I appreciate your argument that, well, they're committed, they're required to do this, but that's a lot different than procedures that, if these plants had already been completely built, that would be a different issue.
That would be the most extreme case, Your Honor.
And that would be the Neepool case.
Right. That would be at least part of the Neepool case.
Yeah.
The
Neepool then they would have the reliance argument to rest on.
Pardon?
Then they might have their reliance argument to rest on.
They might, Your Honor, but that really was not raised below. It was raised in the rehearing order for the first time, but they never said below.
They are FERC. They can do that in the rehearing order. If you don't like it, you're supposed to object.
Well, which
you really didn't.
No, we didn't. We didn't ask again for rehearing, Your Honor.
This is they come up with a new rationale, which is reliance, at least for the up to the certain date, whatever that date was. You do have to object to that different ground if we're going to consider the objection. But in any event, we're not quite there. Certainly is a difference between something that is completely done and something that you could sue them if they didn't do.
Well, but some of these projects, Your Honor, had been very far along. As we point out in our reply brief, it wasn't just that they had been committed. They were far along in the planning process as well. And in some cases, much of the work had already been done. And so it wasn't as if they...
Construction work?
Yes, Your Honor. Construction had been begun on many of the projects and had actually been very far along on many of the projects.
Counsel, are the projects involved exactly the same as the projects listed at 591?
At 591, Your Honor?
Right, of the joint appendix. It wasn't completely clear to me.
Just one moment.
I mean, we seem to be looking at a subset of the projects conceivably covered by Order 489.
Those are the reliability projects with estimates greater than $10 million, Your Honor.
Okay, yeah. So we don't worry about the the smaller ones. But at least in that list, two comparatively small items are described as under construction.
And this is at a very early stage, Your Honor. I believe this is at in 2004 when these were prepared. It's
right.
Not. I don't believe there's
July 04 status. You're probably right. Right. We don't.
Yes.
We don't know. At least I don't know.
How much further along they
How
were by the time? Yes,
were.
Your Honor. We did cite in our reply brief a couple of other projects that were actually completed, and those were fairly substantial projects. So much of this work was ongoing and had been nearly completed, if not completely completed. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Fine, thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Lona Perry for the Commission, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Just as an aside, I would like to point out that on the issue of whether the petitioners had raised below the alleged inconsistency between the standards, the reference to page 406 of the JA, that sentence that was quoted, they're saying that the standards the commission employed in 489 were inconsistent with the price reform final rule, which is 679. So the argument there doesn't have anything to do with the suspension order or the order setting it for hearing. It has to do with alleged inconsistency with order 679, which the commission issued after the Congress passed Section 219 of the Federal Power Act.
But I thought the point was that the standard in setting this for hearing was to reflect the 679 standard.
Well, no, Your Honor. When this was originally set for hearing, the suspension order was issued in March of 2004. Section 219 of the Federal Power Act was not enacted until August of 2005. Right. There was no contemplation of Section 679 or Section 219 or of the final rule, which was Order 679 or Section 219, at the time the suspension order was issued. And incidentally, with respect to the inconsistency.
Can I just be clear? At the time that the matter was set for hearing, you're saying there was no standard enunciated by FERC at that time?
No, Your Honor. There had been in 2003, in January of 2003,
right.
The commission had issued a proposed pricing policy.
Right.
And in that policy, the commission had proposed 100 basis adder for building investments that were required by the RTO that didn't have any performance standards or anything to it. It was just if you built projects that were required by the RTO, then you would be entitled to 100 basis point adder, assuming that it fell within the range of reasonableness. And that was the proposed pricing policy was the basis on which the transmission owners in this case originally requested the 100 basis point adder.
But there was a NEPOOL case already.
Yeah.
That was 2001.
I thought there was standards about calibration and a relationship between the adder and results.
Well, what the commission had said was in the PJM RTO order, prior to this being set for hearing, the commission had said, because we haven't actually enacted the proposed pricing policy statement, we are requiring that you make some showing of a nexus between the investment, the incentive that you're proposing, and the investment that is going to be made. And when the commission set this for hearing in the suspension order, that's the standard that they applied. They said the proposed pricing policy will be applied when it's enacted, which it ultimately never was because of the enactment of Section 219. And in the meantime, you have to make a showing of this nexus between the incentive and the investment.
Counsel, could you? I understand the order on rehearing draws a distinction between a certain set of projects and more broadly, the full set of possible projects under 489. And I guess what's not 100% clear to me is the findings that are actually made as to the set of projects for which the 100 basis point adder is approved in that order. right?
Well, the projects for which the basis, for which the 100 basis point adder is approved, are the projects that are scheduled to be completed prior to December 31st, 2008.
Okay. And the order on rehearing says that with respect to them, there is substantial evidence. The question, obviously, about substantial evidence is substantial evidence of what?
Oh, the substantial evidence of what, Your Honor, goes to the need for these projects. The commission was making reference to the fact, which it had referred to repeatedly, that these particular projects were, it's not just a question of doing forward planning and projecting into the future needs, but these were projects that were necessary. They should have been in place yesterday, and they needed them as soon as possible, and there were tremendous reliability issues in New England.
Where is the best passage in the order on rehearing that asserts that proposition?
Well, the best passage in the order on rehearing, where the commission talks about the critical need for these facilities, is at your joint appendix at page 444, which is paragraph 73 of the rehearing. And in that paragraph, and in the accompanying footnote, the commission cites to what is in your record at page 584, which is the executive summary of the transmission plan for 2004.
I'm sorry, where are you? At which paragraph number?
At paragraph 73.
73, okay.
On page 444. And it goes over to 445 and includes footnote 63. And footnote 63 is a portion of the executive summary from the transmission plan for 2004, which describes the critical nature of these facilities and the fact.
I thought 73 was simply shifting the burden there. I didn't see that as the commission making a statement of substantial evidence.
Well, what the commission is saying is there's no dispute regarding the New England region's need for these facilities. And
right. I don't think that's even the issue here. I mean, the plan says we need these facilities. All right, the question is, as I understood the earlier discussion is, where is it, on paragraph 39, where the commission says, this is JA 433, the proposed incentive will assist in bringing these projects online in a timely fashion, impetus to push hard, favorable financing terms. And the question I thought that was being raised in part here is the fact that the experts could not identify how anything would change in light of obtaining this 100-point adder. I mean, that things were going forward, that they were doing what they could, that they, and the investment, they could get the investment. And the commission really never comes back and says anything other than what Judge Williams suggests. It's human nature that if you get more money, you do more. That's what I thought the issue was here.
Well, Your Honor, the commission goes through in some detail discussing the various expert evidence that was introduced. The rehearing order at paragraph 74 through 77 at JA 445 and 446.
Right.
And, you know, it details the fact that there was an economist who testified that it would stimulate problem solving. There was a...
So 75 talks about you get better results.
Right.
And then... And they admitted that there was no way to measure that. And then Mr. Scott said his experiences in the United Kingdom, where it's a completely different type of standard. And then Mr. Schnitzer says economic theory.
Mr. Schnitzer says, well, first of all, with regard to the United Kingdom, it is a different system, but what Scott testified to and was that even though it's a different system, the point being made was that utilities respond And it, in his experience, he has seen that utilities respond to the kind of financial incentives that we're talking about here. And the financial
incentives. How could FERC measure them? That's what I'm getting at. The experts just suggest if you throw money at something, it'll be better, but FERC will never be able to tell if that were true or not.
Well, Your Honor, there was all of this testimony that has to do with it would give people the incentive to do it. And also Schnitzer's testimony.
But let me just ask you, on substantial evidence, doesn't somebody have to say, look, if I get this 100-point adder, I'll be able to do something that I otherwise wouldn't have done? Or no?
Well, let me say, for one thing, Your Honor, to just as an example to show you that the fact that it is listed in the RTO plan doesn't mean that it's actually going to get constructed. At 587 of the joint appendix.
But I thought the testimony was that the transmission owners said they could get the investment capital.
They could get the investment capital, but right. The commission's point was all of these things don't mean that the projects are ultimately going to get constructed at the end of the day.
All I'm saying is, doesn't there have to be some evidence that if I get this 100% adder, I'm going to do something differently? No? That's what I don't understand about the argument.
Schnitzer actually testified, Your Honor, at several places in your joint appendix. There's at JA-235 and JA-247 as to examples of the kinds of things that people could do different. Now, they don't know precisely what each individual transmission owner might actually do different, but he listed things about, like, their control of the proposal, their control of the support for the proposal, how they interact with the other groups who are applying, whether they can form coalitions, whether they can make settlements, whether how they modify any proposals, how they gain local support, how they go about the technical and political process.
Since a number of these projects have started, construction is underway, and I thought even a couple had been completed. And then the commission comes along and approves the adder.
Well, Your Honor, the transmission owners applied for this adder long before any of this happened, when they joined the RTO, when they were planning to join the RTO.
I understand that, but the commission was faced with being overtaken by events. You know, the shovel is in the ground.
But the majority, the key projects, several of the, there are four projects at JA 587 that the RTO defined as being critical, the key projects. Two of them were only barely completed by the end of December 31st, 2008. Those are the ones for which there were waivers requested, but they turned out to actually not be necessary, and the projects were actually completed by December 31st, 2008, but not until then. And one of the projects of the four, the Southern New England Reinforcement Project, was never completed. It never got the adder, and it was never built. And so the point...
So that's why?
I don't know why it did not get built, Your Honor, but it just goes to show that it reinforces the commission's point that just because these are in the plan doesn't mean that they're actually going to get constructed, and all sorts of things can happen along the way that can interfere with that. And so, you know, just of the four key projects, one of them never made it, and two of them only made it just at the deadline of December 31st, 2008.
Can I ask you about... I would reformulate your argument. Tell me if this is the best argument you have, that you are within the range of reasonableness, that you're at the midpoint, that there's no dispute about that, that when you're within the range of reasonableness within the midpoint, you can add more money on a more sort of economic directional argument, that the more money you give, the more likely to be. If you were above that level, you couldn't do that, but within that, you can. That you're not even doing that for new projects, that you've decided that for new projects there does have to be a project-by-project explanation. But the reason you're not requiring it for these is that there is a reliance interest. Is that really where you are?
Largely, Your Honor, but you also have to add into that, it's not just the reliance argument, but it's also the commission's finding in the at JA 437, the rehearing order, paragraph 54, that...
Oh, and I would add, obviously, that...
There is substantial evidence as to these projects in the record, which makes it...
Substantial evidence that they're necessary for reliability, or substantial evidence about what?
It's substantial evidence that they're necessary, that they meet the kind of, what the commission was doing was saying, we're turning to 679 in the future because we think you have to make those kind of project by project showing. But here, with respect to the projects that are in this locked in period, we're finding there's not much difference between the 489 standard and the 679 standard because we have substantial evidence about these projects. And the substantial evidence.
You're saying that that should be read to imply substantial evidence of the propositions that 679 requires
exactly,
going forward.
Exactly, Your Honor. It's the kind of project-by-project showing of a need for reliability or to solve congestion issues for economic purposes to save consumers money on the transmission of electricity. And so it's a combination of the reliance interest, but also the fact that there was substantial evidence with regard to the 2004 projects that were in the record that demonstrated the need for those projects.
Mr. Snitzer's analysis suggests that if the adder accelerates construction by 2 years, then the 100 basis points will be fully justified. Now, I guess it looks to me as if it would be improbable that given the comparatively short time frame for all these projects, that the 100 basis points adder could accelerate matters that much. Am I right in inferring that?
Well, you have to remember, Your Honor, that they made the applications for these projects much earlier than the commission ultimately ended up ruling on them. And there was, as the commission pointed out, an ongoing reliance interest beginning with the proposed pricing policy statement back in 2003. And so there was a much longer timeline
right.
that was available. And the thing is, too, that you don't know. I mean,
these firms are aware that what's proposed in 2003 may not actually be adopted in 2006 or 2008.
That's right. Possible, Your Honor. But given the things that the commission said, they had every reason to be optimistic. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're still going to be hearing, though. They knew that it was going to be opposed.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Limit to how much they can rely on always winning.
But again, I say they had reason to be optimistic. And one thing you have to bear in mind is, for example, the commission said things like, in the rehearing of the suspension order, the commission said that the incentive was an important first step in encouraging investment in transmission facilities. And there were statements like that that gave them reason to think that the commission would be favorably inclined towards the incentive adder. And even though in 2005 the ALJ rejected the incentive adder, it was only 2 months and change after that that 219 was enacted, which directed the commission to give incentives for transmission facilities. And so there was really not much of a point at which they didn't have reason to think that the commission was going to be favorably inclined.
They were directed to give incentives, but the question is whether this is an incentive or not. That was the point of the hearing, to determine whether it was or not.
Exactly, Your Honor, and that's where all the evidence came out about expert judgment that this was actually going to have an incentive effect in speeding up the construction of these facilities.
You have to concede this was pretty weak. I'm not saying it wasn't substantial evidence. I haven't made up my mind about that, but this is not the kind of specific evidence that, you know, we have data that if you provide this level of a financial incentive, you'll get this much speed or anything like that. This was just sort of very directional. More money, more speed.
There was testimony, Your Honor, however, about how in this case you really couldn't come up with that kind of benchmark because there are so many variables that go into these projects. I mean, you're talking about multi-billion dollar transmission projects and isolate.
It's not impossible to say, look, if we get this 100%, 100 point adder, we're going to add, you know, 50 more people to get this through the local zoning process or whatever it is, or we're going to hire an even better law firm to get us through the zoning process.
It's good news.
Something like that. And we don't have that, do we?
The problem is, Your Honor, because of all the variables that are involved and because of all the external variables that are involved that they have no control over.
It's so complex, we can't tell you anything, but we want the money. That's not going to work. Tell me about paragraph 55 of the rehearing order. That's on JA 438. Can you just translate that for me? I'm sure Judge Williams and Judge Garland understand it, but I need to be clear I understand it. In other words, this is the reliance paragraph.
What the commission was saying is that they were choosing December 31st, 2008 as the cutoff date, which was used to define the universe of projects that would be that could possibly receive the adder. And they were choosing that because there was a pending, because basically of the New England ISO's pending rate filing, which
had assumed there would be this adder.
It had assumed that there would be the adder, Your Honor, but I think that what is significant about the filing is that it identified the projects that were either going to be completed or anticipated to be completed by the end of 2008.
So it had nothing to do with the adder.
Well, no, Your Honor, that's because they were relying on the presence of the adder up until this point, and they were saying, because you have this current rate filing out there, we're going to use that rate filing to define the end of the locked-in period for the 489 adder. But after that, you would have to make the individual showing under 679.
Just be clear on what you're going to do in the future. Is the only additional point in the future is that each project has to be shown to be needed for greater reliability or capacity? Is that it, or do you have to actually show more of a relationship in those future projects between I don't know, the amount of the incentive and how much faster it'll get built?
There is a rebuttable presumption, Your Honor, under 679 that a project qualifies for the adder if it is directed by the RTO to build facilities that the RTO deems to be needed for reliability or for economic.
But is the rebuttal only on the question of whether it's needed, or is the rebuttal on the question of whether it actually provides, you know, how much of an incentive or that sort of thing? Are you saying that the same level of evidence that was provided here would be sufficient in the future, provided that the same level of the same level of evidence about an incentive effect, provided there is the same level of evidence about the need for the plant?
It certainly would cause the rebuttable presumption to come into play. Now, whether the commission would take...
When you say that, I'm just going to ask you, how do you rebut that presumption?
Well, no, that's what I'm about to say, Your Honor. The commission has identified some things that would go to the issue of whether you're entitled to get the adder or not. For example, if it's a routine project, as opposed to being one that carries particular risks because of the size or the nature of the project, those sorts of considerations the commission has identified as being things that would impact on whether the adder gets granted.
So are these routine projects or not routine projects?
Oh, the key projects that the RTO was pointing to, I mean, you can look at the list on JA 591, and the key projects, the first project is in the $1 billion range. They're in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
The answers are not routine.
They're not routine.
Right. Is there another factor?
I don't know, Your Honor, that they have identified specifically what factors would
actually... So just again to be clear, your argument is very close to the argument in the main PUC case, which was that the only calibration we really required was that it to be within the zone of reasonableness. We did not require evidence that 50 points was the amount necessary to get them to join the RTO as compared to 49 or something like that. We relied on Permian Basin for the proposition that these kind of predictions have to be left to the agency. Is that where we are?
That's pretty much where we are, Your Honor, although I'll make one point, which is that no one in this proceeding ever challenged the size of the adder. And this was the ALJ pointed this out at JA 315, paragraphs 145 and 46, and the commission pointed it out again at JA 373, 489, order 489, paragraph 88, that nobody ever challenged the 100 basis points. It was always assumed that it's either 100 basis points or nothing. And nobody ever said it should be 50, it should be 200, it should be anything else. So that was never at issue in this case.
The difference, though, is that in the main case, if I'm thinking of the same main case, it was clear that the transmission owners had to give up something by joining the RTO. They had to give up certain independence that they had. So they were getting an adder for giving up that independence. I mean, it was undisputed, as it were.
In this case, Your Honor, what they were getting is money to give them incentive to build faster and to make sure the building was successful. And so it's different in that sense, but that's the reason why the commission had the hearing and took evidence on the question of would this in fact achieve this incentive effect. And it, there was ample expert testimony to the effect that it would do that. And so the commission made a reasonable predictive judgment based on its own interpretation of human behavior, if you will, and the expert testimony that the incentive would have the desired effect and would in fact achieve timely and successful completion, more so than in the absence of the adder.
I mean, that's close to a truism, isn't it? In other words, these companies had said they were going to do this, they were going to use their best efforts, they were going to do it in a professional manner. There wasn't any question about they're trying to slip something by here, was there?
It wasn't a question of that, Your Honor. It is back to a question of, as was discussed earlier, it being a question of priorities and of this becoming more important to them to accomplish and accomplish sooner, because they don't get the adder until the project is actually completed. And so it gives them incentive to achieve this project sooner. And you can do a reasonable, in the ordinary course of business, good faith effort to get the project built, or you can make it a priority. And it's not that there's anything wrong with the reasonable good faith effort, except for the fact that these projects were critical and needed to be installed as soon as possible in order to resolve the reliability problems that were already being experienced in New England. And that's what distinguished them from the ordinary course of planning, where you would allow reasonable time to get projects accomplished. That's why timeliness was such an important consideration.
I guess, I mean, the basic proposition is that the bottlenecks that these were designed to cure inflicted almost randomly a whole set of large costs, potentially including outages.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. There were all kinds of congestion costs, reliability must-run arrangements, stopgap measures, all kinds of things that incurred enormous costs to consumers that would be alleviated if they could get these transmission projects built.
Anything further?
If there's nothing further, thank you.
All right. Counsel for petitioner.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have just a couple of comments, first about the Maine PUC case, which I think is quite different, really, from the situation that we have here. In the Maine PUC case, the commission decided on the policy grounds that they would give the adder of the 50 basis points, but there was a clear quid pro quo. The quid pro quo was not only that they would join the ISO or the RTO, which was much stronger than the prior arrangement, had a much longer term than the prior arrangement, so there was a clear benefit to be derived to customers from that, but also that they do it in a timely way, because...
In Maine, did the commission lack authority to order that which it rewarded?
No, Your Honor. I mean, the court found that they could order that on policy grounds.
Okay, so they could order it, so... It again is a case where somebody gets a reward for doing that which the commission is entitled to demand.
No, Your Honor, that I misunderstood your question. I'm sorry. The commission could not order them to join the RTO. In fact, they were prohibited. They're prohibited by section, I can't remember the section, is prohibited by statute from doing that. It's a purely voluntary organization. So they were giving them incentives to join the organization. And they did so in a very specific way, too. They said you must join by December 31st, 2004, or you don't get the incentive. So there was a clear quid pro quo and a performance measure. None of that is present here.
I think that's right there. But there was the argument raised in that case that it wasn't appropriately calibrated.
The calibration issue, I think, it was correctly decided in the main PUC case. But here what we've got is not really a question about the calibration of whether it should be 100 basis points or whether it should be 50 or 200 or whatever. The calibration calculus that we would do is just looking at paying 100 basis point adder, and what do we get in return? Nothing.
Well, the argument is you get rid of all these bottlenecks and potential outages that are costing consumers lots of money.
But interestingly, although counsel for FERC went through Mr. Schnitzer's testimony of things that conceivably might be done to try to speed that process along, when Mr. Scott was asked that question, what would you do? He said, I can't think of a single thing. And Mr. Schnitzer said, well, do you know, in response to questions in cross-examination, do you know whether big companies are already doing these things? And he said, I don't know. He didn't have any idea whether there was anything more the companies could do or not. And certainly Mr. Scott couldn't think of anything else more that they were going to do. So the conclusion from the ALJ when she heard this testimony was this isn't going to change anything, particularly on speeding the process to get permits, which is the real bottleneck. Unless there are further questions.
Thank you.
We thank you.
Take the case under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you.